Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Swartstrauber, your host. On today's show, a digital single market for Europe. Should the European Union harmonize its technology regulations throughout its member states? Is this a good idea? Joining me in our D.C. studio to discuss this is Massimiliano Trovato, a research fellow at the Instituto Bruno Leone, a libertarian think tank based in Milan. Massimiliano, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining me is Make America Great Again spokesperson, Baron Soka. Thank you, Baron, for joining us.
Make Italy great again, too.
So, Massimiliano, there's a push to harmonize regulations in the EU to make it easier for trade and data transfers and all that type of stuff. Tell us about what the digital single market is.
Oh, the digital single market is a series of 16 proposals that the European Commission put forward in May of last year. And it ranges from, you know, things about taxation, like VAT harmonization, to things like the regulation of digital platforms. There's a lot of stuff in there, very different proposals, and all of them are now going through a stage of public consultations by which the European Commission is trying to gather evidence and opinions by the public.
So let's start with what you see as the good parts of these proposals. Are there things that you support?
Well, I would say I support the general sentiment. I think it's good that the European Commission is taking the lead in trying to devise good policy for digital innovation in Europe, which have been, you know, lagging behind in the last few years. At the same time, I think it's clear that the Commission is putting a lot of time and effort in this kind of endeavor. So that's my main appreciation of the project. As for a particular specific proposals, I'm a bit more critical.
And so where would you see problems with the proposals?
Well, let me start with another general principle. I think harmonization in general is good. Harmonization can also be bad if the rules you are trying to harmonize are bad. So by this I mean that the quality of the rules matters more than the fact that the rules are the same in all of Europe. And I think at some point you need to recognize that just as competition works for products and services, competition also works great for rules. Getting rid of competition in the realm of rulemaking is a very dangerous idea.
So the concern is that just having the same set of regulations for all the countries in the European Union is not necessarily good if those regulations are misguided, and competing to have more pro-innovation regulations could be a good thing. It could be beneficial to the market to have EU nations kind of compete to see who could be the most friendly to business, who could be the most friendly to innovation.
Yeah, that's exactly that. I will favor a general approach to make simple and fairly general rules applicable to all EU member states, but I'm afraid that getting into too much detail about this is going to create more problems than it solves.
Right, certainty just for the sake of certainty is not necessarily it.
So this would be a great opportunity to talk just briefly about the most important libertarian that most Americans, even American libertarians, have never heard of. Bruno Leone, the man for whom the institute that Massimiliano works for is named, made exactly these arguments about the nature of law. What do you take away from his work, and Massimiliano, and how does it inform how you think about this particular digital single market proposal?
Oh, that's exactly right. I think that Bruno Leone has a lot to say about this kind of issues, particularly because he understood that the certainty of the law was not really safeguarded by the fact that laws were written or the laws were mandated by parliaments or other public bodies. He thought that the law was actually the result of interactions among private citizens, like consumers, for example, in this case, and firms on the other hand. So I think Bruno Leoni would be as concerned as I am about the attempt to harmonize all rules at the European level.
So the push for harmonization, as you said, is directly related to the perception that the EU is lagging behind in technological innovation. If you look at the top 10 or 15 tech companies in the world, they're pretty much all in America or China. So why do you think the EU is lagging behind the United States and China when it comes to innovation and having large tech companies like Google and Facebook?
Well, I will say that China is a bit of a different case because there is, of course, a lot of involvement from the government
right. In,
you know, guiding the evolution of the market there. I think a fair comparison is with the U.S. And I think the problem in Europe has been a general lack of economic freedom and a lack of freedom to innovate and invest in this kind of tech sectors. One of the things that this involves is the fact that it is very hard for European startups not just to take off but also to keep growing while staying in Europe. So what happens is that most of them, after the first few years, try and get to jump over the pond to the US. I'm not sure that the kind of proposals that we're discussing today go in the right direction in ensuring a more comfortable environment for corporations and even for startups.
So the basic problem is that the end game for many EU startups is not to succeed in Europe, but to get bought out by an American company?
Yeah, not just that. I think that's, of course, one of the issues. But the more general issue is that for European companies, growth is not really an opportunity in Europe. They would love to stay in Europe, but the environment is just not very receptive to the kind of needs that the technology company have.
But the espresso is better.
The espresso is great, but I mean, there's no point in staying up all night if you can't cash in on that.
All right, so clearly just having good espresso is not going to keep a tech company in the EU. There are other more serious things that need to be done.
So what do you think would keep those entrepreneurs from around Europe from leaving and moving to the San Francisco Bay Area?
Well, I think that part of the issue of harmonization here can play a role. One of the instances, I think it will be more helpful to have more harmonizations is with the issue of funding. It's very hard for European startups to tap into the same kind of capital market that the US have. So that's an area where I would like to see more harmonization rather than less.
And why is it difficult for a European startup to get venture capital funding?
Well, one of the reasons is that the venture capital market is still very fragmented at the national level. So there's really no European market for venture capital. There are several national markets for venture capital. But that's just part of the issue. On the other hand, on the regulatory side, I'm more concerned about the digital single market proposals because I think they go precisely in the opposite direction to the one that would be helpful to startups. So instead of deregulating and granting them more freedom to experiment and innovate, what we're trying to do is to have more rules in place and having the same rules in place all over Europe. So that's kind of a concern for me.
So let's get into some of the specifics of these proposals to harmonize regulation. One of the big issues in the United States is net neutrality. Europe has had kind of a different approach to that issue in recent years, whereas the United States just adopted utility-style regulation, very strict rules that ban experimentation with paid prioritization of internet traffic and other types of things. How does the digital single market handle the issue of net neutrality, and do you see it as a good approach or a bad approach?
Well, the thing is, when everybody is unhappy with what you did, either you did something very good or something very bad. I'm not sure what is the case here, but the thing is that proponents of net neutrality are disappointed with the actual net neutrality regulation that was put in place by the EU institutions. At the same time, net neutrality opponents are also disappointed because the principle is now in the books. So where I see that the EU approach is better than the American approach is the fact that it's more, you know, less radical, I would say. So there is, of course, a ban on blocking and throttling traffic, but at the same time, there is some room reserved for specialized services we could be helpful, and there is, of course, an open issue with zero rating arrangements, because the language of the net neutrality provisions in Europe don't have to do with data caps, so that could be also a good thing. But you see, the debate is still evolving, and it's hard to say where it will end up.
So the basic principles of net neutrality, no blocking of lawful content, no throttling, no unreasonable discrimination, those are all kind of the same between the US and the EU. The real difference is paid prioritization, the ability to experiment with arrangements where certain specialized services, as Angela Merkel has called them, the Chancellor of Germany, who has said that there are some services, including things like telemedicine, that could really benefit from paid prioritization arrangements, and the EU regulations are more permissive, whereas in the United States, with the Title II regulations that the FCC adopted, those arrangements are pretty much banned outright. So, Baron, is there something that we can learn from the EU when it comes to regulating net neutrality?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're leaving room for precisely the sorts of experimentation that we have argued in our brief, representing Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and investors, might very well be foreclosed by the FCC's complete ban on paid prioritization. So it's really ironic that they're, in fact, taking a more flexible approach here. It might have something to do with the fact that policymaking in Brussels, for better and worse, is not yet politicized and subject to the same kind of digital mob demagoguery that it has been here in the US, where the FCC was going to do something like what the European Commission is doing, and was steered in a different direction by the president, by John Oliver, by people who intervened in the process without really caring anything about the details.
And a lot of times the proponents of more regulation and government interference in the market in the United States look to Europe as an example and say, look, countries over there are much more involved in the economy and it works out just fine. But here's an example where they are adopting a much less draconian approach. So let's talk about some of the other issues in the digital single market. Geo-blocking. Massimiliano, what is geo-blocking?
Well, geo-blocking is the practice by which some content owners basically license their content based on national boundaries and forbid access or require different prices in different national markets.
So I'm a Netflix user in Italy, and maybe I go to another country that Netflix hasn't entered that market yet, and now I can't access my account?
Well, that's not exactly the issue. I mean, that's not the issue. It's the issue of content portability, so to speak. And I think we could make a case, and in fact, the Commission is making that case, that you should have the right to access the content you lawfully acquired wherever you're actually are at the given moment. What we're trying to explain here is something a little bit different. So, for example, Netflix is available in Italy for say, €8 a month, and should be available to all of Europe's countries for €8 a month, or should there be one only European Netflix instead of different Netflixes Right. If you can say that.
Netflixes, I think, is the Latin plural.
Okay. At the national level. I think that's a problem, because what we're discussing here is not really intellectual property. I mean, once you assume intellectual property is a thing, you should allow for intellectual property holders to use and market their own property as they see fit. So I think the idea, the attack on geo-blocking is actually an attack on price discrimination. And I think that's very dangerous, because price discrimination is good for consumers and it is good for providers.
So by harmonizing the price of Netflix throughout the entire European Union, you remove the ability of those individual member states to compete to have the best Netflix or the most attractive Netflix to consumers?
Well, not just that. I think the real risk here is to prevent some people from accessing Netflix and other kinds of content, because once you have to set one price which is applicable all over the place, you're no longer allowed to price discriminate. So, for example, if I say a poorer country in Europe with a lower average income than Italy, they may have Netflix for half the price right now. But will Netflix lower the prices when it has to give the same price to all of European customers, or will it just find, you know, a balance and price out some consumers?
Whoa, wait. You're saying that price discrimination means that people who have less money pay less money?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't discrimination always bad? I mean, so here's an example where harmonizing the regulations would prevent a company from taking into account the economic realities of each different country and charge for their product, you know, based on those realities. So let's talk about some of the other issues that the digital single market deals with. Roaming. So can we explain what the issue of roaming is and how it relates to the digital single market?
Yeah, roaming is basically the use of your cell phone when you're on a different network. So in this context, roaming is interesting because the EU has been trying for some years now to regulate the price that consumers pay when they are traveling abroad and using their phones. So, of course, they have been heavily regulating this kind of fees with a price cap for the last few years, and they're foreseeing basically the complete elimination of roaming charges as of 2017. I think that there's a lot of similarities between the geo-blocking case and the roaming case, in that, of course, accessing networks from different countries that one you're based in is a service that not all users value. And the end game here, I think, it will be to give every user higher prices for their phone services.
Wait, you're saying that people in Brussels are making decisions based on what might be good for elites who like to travel all over Europe and use their phones, and then get other people to help pay for those bills, and maybe don't care so much about people who just want a cell phone plan that works in their own country? That sounds unlikely.
I know, Barry. I don't like to think about people's motivations, so I'm just looking at the facts here.
Well, so to summarize, really, this would, harmonizing the roaming issue would prevent customers who just want a very simple, maybe stripped down plan. I don't travel. I stay in one EU nation. I don't want to have to subsidize those people who are just jumping all over the continent using their phone in every single country, because now if they standardize the roaming charges, everyone's bills are going to have to go up to make up for the fact that those carriers can't charge fees to people who roam. So let's talk about another issue, broadband deployment. Oftentimes, the people in the United States who are dissatisfied with their broadband options are, you know, will say things like Europe is much better, but we've pointed out that the United States has twice the broadband investment per capita than the EU. So how does the digital single market handle broadband deployment?
Oh, well, that's been an issue for quite some years, and I think it's another example of why a one-size-fits-all approach is not really the good way to go. Europe has been following an approach by which all countries or member states are required to basically grant the same threshold of broadband availability and broadband speed to all of their citizens. So, for example, France and Lithuania are bound to the same kind of goals in broadband availability. And not only that, which is bad enough, before you determine what the right amount of broadband or the right speed of data speed is to be, you need to make sure that there is a cost-benefit analysis done by which you can actually ensure that the kind of goals you're setting are appropriate for the particular context in which you're kind of working. So
so some countries, setting those goals could pose problems if they're not realistic because the regulations are not taking into account the different broadband markets throughout the EU.
And it's not only that. I think there is one more worrying fact, and it's the fact that EU member states, EU governments, are taking on themselves to ensure that these goals are fulfilled. And that, of course, is bound to create problems for the carriers and problems for competition. I'll give you just a very quick example from my own country, Italy. There's been some discussion going on for the past few months about the better way to reach the goal that was set by the EU. And so the plan initially was to subsidize broadband deployment in so-called white areas, the areas in which private investment alone was unable to grant the kind of results that were expected. So the government would basically assign funds through tenders, and then at that point the providers would have to open up their infrastructure to all our competitors. What eventually happened is that the government just changed its mind and they decided to build the infrastructure on their own. So we are actually seeing direct government investment in broadband infrastructure as a result of poor consideration of the competitive effect of these kind of measures on the broadband market.
And Baron, are there some lessons that we can learn in the United States for the way that the European Union has regulated broadband?
Well, Europe has half the investment per capita in broadband that the US does. And in general, we've talked about this before, it varies, but most European countries have essentially pursued a strategy that revolves around having a single pipe to the home and creating artificial competition around that. And that's not a long-term viable strategy. The U.S. has been much better off trying to pursue a facilities-based competition, getting telephone companies and cable companies to compete with each other, and then trying to make it easier for companies like Google Fiber to enter the market. That's really what Europe should be pursuing now.
So yeah, having one provider and then just reselling that service over and over again, that's kind of like fake competition. Whereas if you have multiple pipes, you have a Google Fiber, you've got a telephone company, you've got a cable company, you're going to get a better result for consumers in general. Before we go, Massimiliano, are there other issues in the digital single market that you'd like to discuss? I mean, we've got data protection, the sharing economy, taxes, regulations. Take your pick.
Oh, well, I will go with taxes very quickly, because this is another example, why not strictly part of the digital single market strategy, but of course related to it, where I think that the concerns for competition were left out of consideration. Competition also includes tax competition, and tax competition is the better tool to ensure that governments don't get too greedy.
Right, because if you don't allow governments to have different taxes, then they can all get away with having taxes that are too high, and a country that wants to make itself more competitive can't get the advantage of having lower taxes.
Exactly. And what the EU is doing at this point, also based on work done by the OECD in the last couple of years, is try to basically make it completely irrelevant for tax purposes where a company is based in Europe. So they were basically, the ultimate goal here is to divide up tax revenues among different governments, irrespective of where actual value is being produced and based on where products and services are being sold. I think that shows a very dangerous concern for sovereignty. So the idea that basically you have to pay a price to be able to interact with customers in a specific country, that's just not the way it should work.
So speaking of which, what about Uber, Airbnb, and other sharing economy services?
Oh, that's another interesting one. Just a few months ago, the EU concluded a consultation on what they call digital platforms. They use a very vague definition and a very vague list of examples that even included Apple TV, which, as you know, is not a platform. It's a box.
Yeah, it's hardware. Yeah.
But at the same time, what they're trying to do is basically to normalize Uber, Airbnb, and those kind of players, trying to subject them to the same rules that are applicable to all the economy providers. I think that's a very bad way to go. I think the ideal way to go will be to understand the differences that and the new challenges that these kind of providers bring about.
So before you go, the digital single market, right now it's just a strategy doc. It really hasn't been implemented. What should listeners be looking out for? What are the next steps on this issue?
Well, the Commission has been making a lot of investigation and consultations in the past few months, and they expect to start rolling out proposals by mid-2016. Some of them should be enforced by the end of 2016. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, at least not going to happen in the precise timeline the EU is envisioning. We should also point out, by the way, that some of the things we discussed during this podcast, like net neutrality and the roaming regulations, those are already in place. So it's kind of a broad bed.
Yeah, they're doing things not just all at once, but some of the issues are being dealt with one at a time. Well, that's it for today's show. We'll certainly be tracking that issue as it continues to develop. My guest has been Massimiliano Trovato, a research fellow at the Instituto Bruno Leone, a libertarian think tank based in Milan. Massimiliano, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been real fun.
And of course, Baron also joined us, but I won't thank him for joining us.
Grazie.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will really help us out. Thank you for listening.